Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
I had a great idea for an episode today, but
yes.
We had already done it.
Well, that would not be a good thing to do.
No. Well, I have a case where I'm working on a mechanics lien type issue. And so I thought, oh, we should do an episode on a mechanics lien. I like to kill two birds with one stone. So, Tommy said, wait a second. I think we already did that.
You know, it took me a little time. I had started doing a little bit of research, and when I started reading these things, I said, wait a minute. I already know this. Something's wrong if I know something.
Well, at least you knew it.
Yeah. Then I started recalling your examples that you used.
Well, you know, examples are a great way to learn.
So then I looked back, and I looked at finally found it. Episode 75. Lean on me, V, when you're not whole.
See, that was episode 70.
75 is what it showed when I looked it up, unless it was off an audio boom.
I don't know.
But that's what it showed, 75.
It was somewhere in the 70s.
Yeah, back in the 70s.
They were a good time back in the 70s, listening to Led Zeppelin, driving around in our Camaros.
That's right. I was in high school then. That was prime time.
What did you have, a Pontiac...
Pontiac Tempest, 68 Pontiac Tempest. That's why I'm so fond of the Pontiacs.
So we're not going to talk about mechanics liens today.
Because we already have.
That's right.
And if you don't remember or you didn't listen, well, go back and listen to episode 75 or the one that's, or 70, whichever one is, Lean on Me, V, when you're not whole.
Maybe I need to go back and listen to them too.
Yeah. Well, I started to just for old time's sake.
Were you missing? You're missing me.
Yeah,
like, I haven't seen Mike in a while.
That was an interesting topic. I should go back and listen to that one.
So, the backup topic for today,
the second choice,
is I am pretty much a litigation attorney, which means I do trials and things like that. Not really doing transactional type stuff. Although I do dabble in contracts here and there,
and magic. Do you dabble in magic?
Illusions, Tommy. Illusions. So I thought we would talk about trials today and litigation. But not just any trials.
Trials and tribulations?
These would definitely be tribulations. I thought we would talk about trial by ordeal.
Trial by ordeal?
Yeah, do you know what that is?
I know of trial by combat.
Well, that would actually be an ordeal.
That's an ordeal?
It is. Trust me. So, trial by ordeal is a broad term, and it describes a ancient judicial practice whereby the guilt or innocence of someone is determined by subjecting them to some sort of painful or unpleasant or dangerous ordeal.
Is that kind of like the witch trials when they used to drop them in the water, and if they sunk and drowned, they were innocent, and if they lived, that meant they were guilty, so they burned them.
It is. And basically, the test was pretty much life or death, and if you live, then you know what? You must be innocent. If you died, then you were guilty. God didn't come down and save you.
Well, all right.
So, but that would be a good fiery topic to talk about.
Yeah, it would be.
Now, trial by ordeal.
Well, we should say that it was kind of brought to our attention. I'm assuming you got it from the same spot that I did.
Well, I did.
The posting on Facebook?
I did, but I went back to look for it and I couldn't find it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so I don't know. I know somebody posted it.
Well, now I came across another article that referred to it, to a person in 2002 that had done that. So I know that it must have actually happened, but that somebody, instead of paying it in somebody in England, instead of paying a 25-pound traffic fine, he wanted to challenge the DMV to a trial by battle.
That's right. Now, it's happened a couple times, because I had seen a couple different ones, but the one said it was this guy named Leon Humphreys, and he demanded a trial by combat citing medieval precedent. And he said he claimed he was entitled to ask the court to establish his guilt or innocence by allowing him to fight to the death against the champion nominated by the DVLA.
That's a little bit more than a 25-pound fine.
Yeah.
Death.
Humphreys of Bury St. Edmunds, Suffolk, unemployed at the time, they had to throw that in there.
He had nothing else to do.
Yeah. Said that his choosing trial by combat meant he did not have to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty. However, the court decided to log his plea as not guilty. The defendant offered to take on a clerk from Swansea with samurai swords, Gurkha knives, or heavy hammers.
Heavy hammers. Let's do that. Like Thor.
Yeah, pretty much.
Give them each a Thor hammer.
I have another story that I found that details using Thor's hammer to settle it as well. I'll get into a little bit later. It's kind of an interesting story. So, trial by combat or trial by ordeal is basically considered judgment by God, judicium dea. And it's a procedure, like I said, basically that God would help the innocent by performing a miracle on their behalf. And the actual has its history all the way back to the Code of Hammurabi. So it actually goes back quite a bit in human history, which it makes sense if you have a very strong faith in God and you think, well, if I'm innocent, then God will make sure I win.
God will intervene on my behalf.
That's right. Now, the first kind of trial by ordeal is obviously by combat. That's the most popular one that you hear the most about.
Mm-hmm.
And that can take place whenever there's two parties who are in a dispute and the individuals themselves, or they can nominate somebody as their champion, as we mentioned before. They will actually fight, and the loser is the one who loses the case, basically.
Well, you lose your life, too.
Yeah, you could. Now, we actually saw that in one of our favorite shows not too long ago. Do you remember when that was?
Game of Thrones.
That's right.
There's actually been several trial by battles that have been offered on the show.
Now, I don't think these are going to be spoilers because we are well past the statute of spoilerations.
Yes, for early seasons or for all seasons of Game of Thrones.
I think so, yeah.
It's entering its final two episodes.
So in season one actually is where it goes back. So if it's run for any season, it's definitely got to be that one. Tyrion is actually arrested and he's imprisoned at the Vale, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. And basically what he says is that he wants to have his brother as his champion. Obviously, Jaime was the best swordsman in the land at the time.
That was before he lost his hand.
That's true. And so they said, no, it'll take too long for him to get here, so you got to choose somebody else.
And Tyrion said, that's all right, I'll wait.
Yeah. And they're like, nope, not going to wait. You're going to get a swift trial right now.
Yeah.
So that's when he chose Bronn to be his champion, and we all know how that ended.
With the other guy, the knight's guard went through the moon door.
That's right. Because Bronn did not fight like a knight. He was a tricky scofflaw, which...
Yeah.
That's allowed.
Yeah. He used guerrilla warfare.
That's right. And then the other one was actually the very famous trial that took place, and I forget what season that was, but that was basically whenever Oberyn Martell fought Gregor Clegane, the Mountain.
The Mountain.
And that's...
And he had him beat. If he had just finished him, instead of going on and being too cocky.
Yeah.
And then he got his eyeballs gouged out and his skull crushed.
That was pretty gnarly.
It was.
So, but Tyrion lost that one, unfortunately.
So he was sentenced to death. However, he escaped with Jaime helping him, and he killed his father as he was leaving the castle.
In the privy.
Yeah.
So
shot him with a crossbow on the turlet.
On the turlet?
What a way to go.
We're kind of turning this podcast into Game of Thrones
here lately. Huh? Well, that's what everybody talks about. That's what, when you look on Yahoo News, every other article is about something to do with Game of Thrones and upcoming episodes and rumors and stuff like that. I thought, when Game of Thrones is over, what are these people going to write about? Yahoo's going to have blank pages. Because that's all they write about.
Yeah, the internet's going to have a lot more room.
Yeah, it's all going to go down.
All those pipes are going to be empty.
What's Al Gore going to do?
So, but I think that's basically a pretty good explanation or example of what Trial by Combat is what you see on Game of Thrones, because it's kind of similar to that.
Yeah, Jon Snow offered to do that with Bolton when he went to go take Winterfell back.
That's right, he did.
And he turned him down because he was afraid of Jon Snow.
As well he should be.
Yeah. And so then the Battle of the Bastards ensued.
That's right. I forgot about that. And that was actually, I guess we could call that maybe more of a civil dispute.
Well, he wanted his castle back. And he was saying, no need in all these men dying. You and me can settle it right here.
Right, that's a property dispute.
Yeah.
So that's true, I guess. He was trying to quiet title there.
Yeah, he wanted his property back, didn't he?
So it wasn't really a criminal matter. It was a civil dispute.
Yeah.
if you want to couch it that way.
Well, and then there was, I think there was one other that was in there. But they did take measures on Game of Thrones to do away with trial by battle.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, when Tommen came into power after... After the other one died, the terrible one.
Joffrey,
after he died and Tommen took it. He took that away, but his mother, Cersei, she didn't like that.
Yeah.
That was how she... Because she had the mountain to defend anything that came up in her honor. Because the way it said is that if you were an able-bodied man, you were supposed to defend yourself.
Yeah.
But if you were a noble person, you could pick a champion. Or if you were a woman or a minor or had a physical infirmary, you could pick somebody. But if you were an able-bodied guy, you were expected to defend your own honor.
Yeah. I think that basically that law change by Tommen was at the insistence of his wife at the time, because I think the Martells knew that
exactly.
She had the mountain, and they were trying to get the mountain out of there.
Yeah.
Move the mountain out of play.
You don't go to the mountain, the mountain will come to you.
Now, the other kind of trial by ordeal, which I don't think this has actually been in Game of Thrones. Well, maybe it has. I don't know. Is trial by fire. I guess you could maybe say Dany getting her eggs was maybe trial by fire.
Well, that's true. She's the unburnt.
That's true. First of her name. The ordeal by fire basically means that somebody has to subject themselves to fire, obviously. And it could be where they have to walk a certain distance over, like, hot coals. Huh. Or they could have to hold a red-hot plowshare. Do you know what the plowshare is?
Yeah, I know what one is, but I guess they're... I don't know how you'd hold one. They're pretty heavy.
Yeah, a plowshare is the cutting edge of a plow.
Well, I thought it was the whole thing. I guess I was thinking of the whole plow.
Yeah, well...
The ones that you hold and walk behind the horse.
Yeah.
Horses or whatever, and they pull and it cuts the ground.
I think it's just the cutting edge.
Oh, just the bottom piece, huh?
That at least is my understanding.
Okay, so, well, that would make more sense rather than the whole thing, because I figure it usually has wooden handles.
Those aren't too hot.
No, unless they're on fire.
They might burn a little bit, but the way that you were established if you were innocent there would either be by a lack of injury, which meaning, you know, you held onto this hot metal or walked on these hot coals and you weren't injured, or another way, which was actually more common because it wasn't too rare you would not get injured during the trial by fire, is that a priest or someone would bandage up and then re-examine your wounds 3 days later, and they would determine whether or not that God had intervened to heal your wounds, or if they were merely festering. And basically, if you were festering, then they would say, oh, you're definitely guilty, you're exiled, and you're going to die. And so that was the way...
You're guilty of festering wounds.
You're guilty of an infection. But again, it's based on that principle of God will heal those who are innocent. So, yeah, not really bacteria or, you know, anything like that. So, one of the earlier examples of this is actually from the First Crusade. And I thought this was kind of funny. I guess it's kind of funny. Peter Bartholomew allegedly went through a trial by fire in 1099 by his own choice to disprove the charge that his claimed discovery of the Holy Lance was fraudulent. He died as a result of his injuries.
So it was fraudulent.
He was guilty. So I don't know why I thought that was funny.
Well, you know, one of the other things in the trial by combat, if say that you're the one that you're the plaintiff, not the defendant, but the mm-hmm. plaintiff, and at some point during the battle, you decide you've had enough, and so you call it off. Like, you see this guy's going to kill you.
Yeah.
So you call it off. You can then be killed or banished because you charged this guy and you didn't even finish the fight.
Oh.
So they could turn that around on you then, and in some cases you were executed for it because they say you falsely accused the other person.
Well, that's kind of similar to something they have in modern day jurisprudence. You have something called a proposal for settlement. And basically what that means is that if you say you're suing me for damages, you're suing me and you say your claim's worth $100,000. And I've looked at your claim and I think, you know what? I think Tommy has a bit of a point here. I think I do owe him something, but there's no way I owe him $100,000. I think I owe him $15,000. So you draft what's called a proposal for settlement. You send it over and say, I'll settle with you right now for $15,000. You have a certain amount of time to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, and then basically you get a judgment, you win, but it's within a certain percentage of that $15,000,
mm-hmm.
you actually lose because you have to pay me all the fees.
Because you were willing to settle it for what was reasonable and I didn't. So then you get repercussions.
That's right. And your repercussions are you have to pay my attorney's fees. Also, you're exiled.
Which are probably more than $15,000.
Yeah, they could be.
Where do you get exiled to?
Nova Scotia? I don't know. It's the first place that popped to mind.
Australia or New Zealand.
Yeah, there you go.
It's on the other side of the world. You have to hang upside down.
But that kind of is a theory that, you know, very broadly applied. You could kind of see it in today's law.
Yeah.
So, now I thought another interesting story from the history of trial by ordeal. Mm-hmm. It relates to a certain Dominican friar in 1498 named Savonarola. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Savonarola. And he basically was a reform leader.
He just had the one name? Was that his first or his last name?
It's Girolamo.
Girolamo. Okay, so he did have two names. You were just avoiding the other one?
Yeah, I was 50% there.
Although, I thought maybe he was like Madonna or something.
Girolamo is actually easier to pronounce than Savonarola. Yeah,
there's a lot of allo going on there.
There is. And basically, he wanted to reform the church, and he basically said, I will prove that that it is God's will that I'm here to reform the church because I'm going to undergo trial by fire. And it was the first time it had happened in over 400 years, according to this article I read. And basically, what happened was, so the fire is there. He's getting ready to subject himself to the fire to prove the fact that he is God's chosen one and God's will or whatnot.
Right.
And then all of a sudden rainstorm pops up and douses the flames and basically canceling the event.
And does he say, there, that's proof. God saved me from the flames.
Well, I'm sure that's probably what he said.
Yeah.
But everyone else said basically that, no, that's a sign from God that he's against you. He didn't want to let you prove it yourself.
Whoa, I would have thought the other way.
So the Inquisition basically arrested him, and he was convicted of heresy and hung.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some hardcore stuff there.
But think about that. You're sitting there, you're like, you're getting ready to subject yourself to trial by fire. You're thinking, okay, I got this. Here come the rain clouds. It's going to put it out. And all here comes the rain. It puts it out. You're like, ah, I'm saved.
God intervened and saved me. He did not want to see his servant injured.
Nope. He didn't even want to let you try to burn yourself.
He said it's not worth it. Well, if he had nothing to fear, if he was lying, so, I mean, you know, God didn't need to intervene on that part because if the guy was lying, he was going to burn up anyway.
That's right. But now there's also instances of this in, like in Persia, like Iran, places like that. And also in India, there was also trial by fire and trial by ordeal as well. The one in India I thought was kind of interesting is that basically they would make an invocation and then they would build a huge pyre and light it on fire. Then the accused was supposed to go and sit on it. And according to the Hindu mythology, the fire god would preserve the accused if he was innocent. If not, he would be burned to ashes. So yeah. Why don't you just walk up that funeral pyre right there and go
just
ahead and
sit down.
Sit down, have a seat. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we're going to set it on fire. Let's see how far that goes.
How often do you think people were proven innocent?
I don't think I'd ask for that as my thing. Because the thing was, is the person that was subjected to it, he had to ask for it.
Yeah.
It's not like they would sentence you to trial by fire. You had to request it.
Well, that's at least in the mythology we've seen. I mean, who knows? I don't really know what took place in India. That might actually be your trial.
Well, that'd be more of a punishment than a trial. I don't know.
It's in the Constitution. You're guaranteed to trial by pyre.
Yeah, that's right.
It's one of your constitutional guarantees. Isn't it great to live here? What a time.
Well, they were saying that it's never really been addressed in the United States because it was basically abolished in England by the time, you know, by 1776 when we were establishing our laws.
Yeah.
But they're saying it's still kind of an open question, and there have been people from time to time that have popped up in America and tried to use that.
Yeah, I actually found an article about one that I was going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Did you find an article about somebody?
No. I saw a couple of it, just some instances where people tried to use it in different years. Like one as recently as 2015.
I saw one even more recent than that.
Oh, well, then you got one more recent than me.
I'm going to get to that in a minute, but there's also some more trial by ordeals as well.
Yes.
Trial by water.
Well, that's like the witch thing, huh?
It is.
Yeah.
And there's also, there's different kinds of water. I think that's more like a dunking type thing that you're thinking of. Trial by hot water is basically where somebody is supposed to dip their hand into a pot of boiling water. And you could also use like oil or any other kind of really hot substances.
Anything that's going to burn your ass.
It's guaranteed to burn you.
Yeah.
And then basically you're supposed to reach down in there and grab a stone or a ring or something like that. And then basically if you were not injured, then you were innocent. Or alternatively, if you did not recover from your wounds, then you must be guilty. So it's kind of the same type deal.
I would say, I want to have trial by water. I will go into my hot tub and stay in there 15 minutes. And if I'm not burnt, then I must be good.
I shall require a Corona with lime.
I will come out relaxed and an empty beer bottle.
Can you please put on some Jimmy Buffett tunes? Now, the other kind of water ordeal is the cold water ordeal. So you can have hot water, you can have cold water. And basically, one of the ways they did the cold water was that they would dunk you in a freezing water and let you stay there for a while. And if you came out and you didn't die, then you must be okay. Mm. And the other one I saw was kind of interesting. And it basically, a person accused of poaching was supposed to be submerged into a barrel 3 times. And if they sank, then they were innocent.
Sank in the barrel?
Yeah. If they were
that
guilty.
That must be a big damn barrel.
If they were guilty, they floated. So basically, you would drown if it sank, but you'd be innocent.
Yeah, that doesn't do you much good.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the same thing as the witch hunts, too. Because
yeah, basically it's a lose situation.
Yeah, and when they would 16th and 17th centuries, whenever they would dunk witches, basically if the witch floated, that indicated witchcraft, and if they sank, that meant they were innocent. But oftentimes they would drown when they sank. So, regardless, it was basically there was no way of having a living acquittal. You were guaranteed to basically die somehow.
Here lies Abigail. She was proven not to be a witch and also not a swimmer.
But you could, I guess, you know, you could tell somebody, well, you may die, but at least God will know you're innocent and your place in heaven will be there for you.
Yeah, that's cold comfort.
There you go. Very cold, especially in the cold water trials.
Now, they tried that later at Guantanamo, but it was waterboarding.
That's true. Yeah, that's no laughing matter. Torture's no joke.
Well, Dick Cheney said it's only torture. He said it can't be torture because the United States does it, and the United States does not participate in torture.
That sounds like some pretty circular reasoning.
That's what I saw on that movie Vice. That's what he said. He said, no, waterboarding can't be torture because the United States does it, and the United States does not participate in torture.
Was that movie good?
It was very good.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
It was informative, and he did a great job in his role.
Yeah.
Steve Carell was in it, too.
Really?
Played Donald Rumsfeld. He was great. I mean, he really did good. You think of him as being funny, but he did a good job in that part, and he looked a lot like him, too.
Do you know something very interesting I saw today? This has nothing to do with our topic and nothing to do with Vice or anything, but it's just something interesting I saw today.
What? Fill us in on this random bit of knowledge.
Have you, you've seen the movie Pulp Fiction, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the scene where they go to the diner and they're sitting there and the waiter comes up and asks them what they want?
Right.
Do you know who that waiter is?
No.
It is Steve Buscemi.
Really?
It is.
Well, I probably would know that if I went back and watched it.
I got to tell you, I've seen that movie a lot and I actually never noticed it was Steve Buscemi because he's got a hat on and glasses and... But now that I think about it, when I hear the voice, like, oh, you know,
yeah,
what? That's definitely him.
That voice is so distinct.
But here's the interesting thing. Now, have you seen Reservoir Dogs?
Yes.
He plays Mr. Pink.
Right.
At the very beginning of that movie, they have an argument about tipping the waitress, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I used to work for minimum wage, and he's very adamant that they need to tip the waitress.
Yeah.
So the theory is that in Pulp Fiction, that was actually technically Mr. Pink who was the waiter, and he's referencing it back in Reservoir Dogs.
Well, it very well could be.
Mind blown.
Well, and they're both by, what's his name, aren't they?
Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty amazing.
I'm glad you filled in what's his name for me, because I was going to be struggling there to try to remember that. But
Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I celebrate all of his movies.
Well, I do, too. I just... I'm not very good with names. I keep forgetting them. And the older I get, the more I forget them.
Well, back to witches.
All right.
Now,
witches and waterboarding.
Now, there's several different reasons why they thought witches would float as opposed to sinking.
Their magic.
That was probably part of it. But one was because since they had renounced baptism... They refused to be dunked, and so that's why they would float, because when you're baptized, you were dunked underwater.
Sure.
So they refused baptism, so that's why they floated.
Okay.
The other was because they were supernaturally light, and that basically, if you had to weigh them, that would determine whether or not they were evil or not. And of course, you remember the scene from Monty Python, don't you? She's a witch! Burn her! And then... That's when I forget which knight it is. He comes up and he says, he tries to stop. He's like, stop, stop, stop. He goes, dunking is not going to prove anything. You need to weigh her. And so they're like, what apart from a witch would float? And they're like, a duck. And so they say, right. So therefore, if she weighs the same as a duck, she must be a witch. Do you not remember that?
Kind of, but it's been a while.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he got her off then, huh? Because she weighed more than a duck, huh?
No.
Oh.
They actually weighed the same, which was kind of like, and she was like, this is such a crock.
She weighed the same as a duck.
Now, one of the other reasons that basically that a witch might float, it was because the water was so pure that basically it repelled the guilty.
Oh.
So
it was holy water.
Yeah, it could be holy water. So. So that's kind of interesting. Now, another trial by ordeal was trial by cross. And basically, what this was is that it was an attempt by Germanic peoples to kind of discourage different kinds of duels and things like that. And basically, the two people stood on either side of a cross and stretched their hands out horizontally, and the first one to lower their arms lost.
Yeah. They didn't pull on each other. They just held their arms out.
Yeah. It's like, let's see who can hold each other's arms up the longest.
Well, you know, it's funny you say it because what I found referred to is that the whole trial by ordeal or trial by combat was a Germanic custom.
Yeah.
They were the ones that developed it, and then it spread to several other areas, but that they were the ones that actually developed it.
Yeah. That's kind of where it started, and it kind of worked its way through to, I guess, English kind of common law type way. One of the other things, this is kind of an interesting way, was trial by ingestion. And so basically what this is...
Make you drink poison and see if you live?
Yeah, it could be poison or it could be something else.
Like glass or something?
Well, there's different ways. So basically this one was they would give you dry bread and cheese, which had been blessed by a priest. And if you choked on it, you were considered guilty because it'd be super dry. You didn't have anything to wash it down with.
Well, as long as you got to take your time, it'd be all right. If they crammed you a whole mouthful in, that might be dangerous.
If it's like one of those type competitions when you go to a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
you have to do it within so much time and get your picture on the wall.
Well, yeah. I try that to eat big steaks.
The old 96er?
Yeah. John Candy.
Now, an interesting one would be that if a woman was accused of adultery, that they would actually have to swallow a bitter water that caused the cure. And basically, it would have been blessed by the priest, and that would determine their guilt. And basically, it said that if her belly shall swell or her thigh rot, then she would be guilty. And that was kind of the way they could tell if she was guilty of adultery. But think about this.
Your thigh rot?
Well, the basis for it, there is some sort of rational basis for it, mm-hmm. is that basically if the woman became pregnant, her belly would swell, right?
True.
So there's that. Or if you had venereal disease, that can actually cause rotting.
Well, yeah, or what appears to be rotting.
It appears to be rotting, yeah. So basically those are the two different things. Hmm. So it's kind of interesting. And so some of these things are actually based on actual observations you can make from things. They just have no real relation to what they're trying to show. Another one was that you make the woman drink holy water again, and then if she miscarried, then that was basically proof of her guilt too, that basically that was not her husband's child. So
I'm glad we have DNA testing these days. That makes it much more sure.
Absolutely. Now, there are some, like you said, ingesting poison, which is kind of the same thing as basically trial by fire and those type things. And there's different cultures that had that. In Nigeria, they would have somebody take something called the calabar bean. And basically, if you vomited up the bean, then you were innocent. If you became ill or died, you were considered guilty. So they give you a poisonous bean, and then if you throw it up, good for you.
Well, if you died, I guess you don't have to go to prison anyway.
That's true. In Madagascar, if you were accused of different crimes, which this article listed theft, Christianity, or witchcraft, so...
Different crimes. Christianity was a crime?
Yeah, with theft and witchcraft. they would have the ordeal of Tangina, and basically that was a poisonous nut that you had to eat, and it was kind of the same thing. And that one study basically said that around 3,000 annual deaths between 1828 and 1861 from this kind of trial. So not too long ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel like a nut and sometimes you don't.
Now here's one trick, real tricky one, is that in medieval Europe, that basically you were asked to go to mass and that you were forced to take the Eucharist. And basically the grounds were that if you were guilty, you're going to be eternally damned, and thus your willingness to take the test would be indication of your guilt. There's no way around that one.
No.
Yeah, so...
These things were rigged. You had to know going in that you're not going to win.
No, this is a lose-lose proposition.
That's just not right.
There was another one by boiling oil, and there were two different ways that it was practiced in West Africa. The other is kind of similar to what we talked about before, but with boiling water, we have to basically reach down and retrieve an item from the burning oil. So it's kind of very similar. You know, if you are unscathed, then you were fine. If you had injuries, if they healed, you were okay. One of the more interesting ones was trial by turf. And this was a Icelandic tradition, which basically the accused had to walk under a piece of turf. And if the turf fell on their head, then they were presumed guilty. So this must be like a cave type thing where there's an overhang.
I guess.
You had to walk under it. And if you were you're guilty, there'd be a landslide on your head. Whoa. This sounds like the most fair one to me. I would probably do this one.
Quick people would be able to get away with that.
Yeah. Now, they didn't say if there was a whole group of people up there jumping on top of it.
Well, that's true. Or waiting with buckets to dump it on you or something.
That's right. Now, there's another way that kind of a trial by ordeal came about. And this was basically called something called cumbergation. And cumbergation is essentially where somebody has to give you an oath as to whether or not you were innocent or not. And basically, a defendant could establish their innocence or non-liability by taking an oath and by getting a certain amount of people, usually the number was 12, to swear that they believe that defendant's oath. And this is about the same time, so it was kind of like the similar to the trial by ordeal, but you were having trial by oath, essentially.
So you had to go out and get 12 people to vouch for you, basically?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, heck, if you had enough money, that would be easy.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is that the use of ordeal and cumbergation and things like this, they really weren't allowed by everybody to use, which is kind of similar to what you had said in Game of Thrones. Because there's a bit of a class distinction there.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, men of good repute who were able to clear themselves by their own oath. So if you were like somebody who was really well respected, you could just use your own oath. Untrustworthy people required the cumbergators, like I had said. So you had to have more people do that. And then untrustworthy men who could not find people to vouch for them had to go to the ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a very, very structured thing. So, you know, the ordeal was basically a lot of times for the people who were not very affluent.
Right.
And if you were middle class, if you had a bunch of friends, we'll vouch for them. If you were poor, you were screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny how you think about that in today's terms with regards to criminal prosecutions and things like that. A lot of times.
Still the same.
Yeah. You see, it's very class driven that people who are not as affluent aren't afforded the same kinds of defenses that other people generally are, which is pretty much a travesty. But
that's true. It said that the main reason that came about is when there were disputes to which there were no witnesses.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one guy's word against the other. So this was a way to settle that. So that kind of goes along the same lines there. So I guess you're getting witnesses basically like, and I don't know what good that does in a trial. Maybe you could answer this, but when you have, what do they call them, character witnesses?
Right.
I mean, hey, I know this guy. He wouldn't do something like that. And you get a whole string of people to come up and say that.
Yeah. Well, character witnesses are generally not a good idea because a lot of times, especially in a criminal case, because that opens the door for people for the prosecution to bring in character witnesses on the bad side.
Yeah.
And so they're not allowed to do that to begin with. You cannot use somebody's bad character to try to prove their guilt or how they acted on that
unless they try to prove their good character.
Right. But there's also a theory too that say that you've been convicted of robbing a house by breaking in, we're probably just robbing a house in general, but we'll get real specific here. You've robbed a house by entering through a first floor window one time before.
Mm-hmm.
And you were convicted of it and found guilty of it. Now, you were charged again with burglary in this new case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally, your past crimes would not be allowed to come in. But because they are presumably of the same kind of character in the same way that you acted before, because in this new crime, you're convicted of breaking through a first floor window as well,
mm-hmm.
that can come in as a prior kind of bad character or prior bad act to try to show how you probably acted on this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally, prior acts don't come in. So if you were convicted of that same burglary before, and then you were on trial for murder this time, that wouldn't come in because it's not related to it at all. But before, if they're somewhat related, then that can probably come in because it shows that you may have acted that certain way on that certain day. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, kind of an interesting thing there.
Yeah.
Now, you were talking about how people have requested trial by combat here in the United States and how it's actually never been explicitly outlawed because it was kind of out of vogue before the United States really came to fruition.
Right.
So there is an attorney, and his name is Richard Luthman, and he is a Staten Island attorney, and he basically wanted to have trial by combat to resolve a dispute that he had helped a former client fraudulently transfer assets. Now, I saw a video of this guy giving an interview, and you should Google this guy and try to find this interview because it's pretty much priceless. And basically, a New York State judge, he actually made this argument to a judge, and the judge basically said that you were indeed correct, Mr. Luthman, that trial by combat is not actually explicitly outlawed in the United States. We decline to order it in this matter. And so basically he actually wrote a one-page decision that the case could be resolved without medieval violence. And he said he did agree with the guy, though, that in theory the court had the power to sanction a trial by combat because it wasn't expressly not allowed, and you're just the way the code was written that you could actually have it. And so basically his argument was, if I'm a lawyer and I'm not allowed to file papers, then this is the end of things. We might as well go to trial by combat. And he said, we might as well get out swords and shields at dawn and settle that way. I met their absurdity with absurdity in kind. And it says, even though he brought his motion to prove a point, he's a big Game of Thrones fan too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He basically realized that explained how he was going to win his fight to the death. He said he was going to use the Warhammer of Robert Baratheon. And basically in his interview, he's holding a Thor hammer in his hand. So during this interview, it actually shows him holding a Thor hammer.
So, he knows how to get the press, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he seems a bit of a nut job, but, you know, hey, yeah. Whatever.
That's right. Going back to the trial by battle that when we talked about it back in the history, was introduced in common law in the Kingdom of England and remained in use during the High and Late Middle Ages. The last certain trial by battle in England occurred in 1446 when a servant accused his master of treason.
Oh.
And the master drank too much wine the night before the battle and was then slain by the servant. So they decided at that point, hey, we don't want to do this anymore. So they did it. However, it continued in Scotland and Ireland.
Do you know how he was...
up through the 16th century.
How he was given so much wine?
No.
By his servant?
His servant served him and then did it. Now, the word you use, because the battle would continue until one person was either dead or disabled, unable to continue fighting.
Yeah.
You could give in, and the word you used was craven.
Mm-hmm.
And it means, I am vanquished. And that was the word, the common word that was used for it. Now, there was another way that you could do this, and it was called the Battle of Seven, where you basically, assuming you were one of the ones fighting, that you weren't in a position where you could get a champion, but you basically would get six other champions,
mm-hmm.
and your seven people would fight their seven people.
Right.
And the last, once one group, seven people were wiped out, however many were left, whether it was one or all seven of the other team, they won.
That sounds like a horrible way. That's going to spawn more disputes.
Well, but here's one that gets even worse. By 1300, the wager of combat had all but died out in favor of trial by jury. One of the last mass trials by combat in Scotland was the Battle of the Clans that took place in Perth in 1396. This event took the form of a pitched battle between teams of around 30 men each.
Wow.
And it said, representing Clan McPherson and Clan Davidson on the north inch in front of the King Robert III. The battle was intended to resolve a dispute over which clan was to hold the right flank in an upcoming battle of both clans and several others against Clan Cameron. So these were two different clans that were fighting on the same side of a battle against a common enemy, and they both wanted to guard the right flank. And they couldn't settle it, so they had this battle to decide who was going to guard the right flank. So 30 from one side met with 30 of the other, and Clan McPherson won, but only 12 men survived the entire battle out of the 60. So I don't think that was worth fighting. I think I'd have said, go ahead, we'll take the left side.
Yeah, I'll go left. I'll go left. It's cool.
I'll zag.
Well, I don't think any of these trial by combats are very well thought out type things.
No, I think it's a last ditch effort. I mean, you know, like when Tyrion does it. It did it in Game of Thrones. He had no other choice. He was going to die if he didn't do that. It was that or nothing. He had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
But as a course of common matter, that's not your first go-to decision. Oh, I know. Let's go battle a trial. I'll save my 25 pounds. No. Pay the 25 pounds, dumbass.
So maybe not necessarily combat, but is there anything you feel confident enough in that you would say, all right, we'll settle this dispute, you know, like say on the court, on a game of one-on-one?
Yeah, that would work. That would be okay.
You would do that?
Well, in this day and age, they'd have a big advantage over me. There was a time where I would have done that.
You're like, okay.
Heck, I played this. Moses Malone one-on-one. I'd take on most anybody.
Did you?
Yeah.
Tell me this story. I don't think I know this one.
You know this story. I was a junior in high school, and he had just graduated high school. And he had committed to the University of Maryland, and he was touring to some different basketball camps with Lefty Giselle, who was the coach of Maryland at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came to our basketball camp because Lefty knew our high school coach. Knew him from college or something like that. So he brings Moses Malone in. Well, of course, he's like 7 foot one or two or something like that, but he was real skinny then. Now, he was big later.
Oh, yeah.
But he was skinny then. But he brought him in. I was the biggest kid at the basketball camp, so they said, here, you want to play one-on-one? I said, sure. So we were playing. We're playing make it, take it.
Oh.
And I was up on him 8-4, and I'm thinking, wow, this guy's a big college player and everything, and he's a big guy, and I'm beating him. And he goes, hand me the ball after the last basket I made. And he goes, are you ready to play now?
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, well, I thought we were. I never got another shot to the rim, and he dunked on me 8 straight times and beat me 12-8. So he'd just been toying with me up until then. And, you know, he never did play college ball. He reneged on going to Maryland and just went straight into the pros.
Really?
Yep. Never played any college ball. Just went straight pro. He was the first person, I think, to go pros right out of high school.
You can't do that anymore, I don't think, can you?
No, there's like a two-year wait, I think. But now they're talking about doing away with that again because the coaches, basketball coaches, college ones, are getting all upset about this one and done. I guess it's 1 year you have to play because they're playing 1 year at these colleges and then going pro. And all these colleges are getting in trouble for recruiting violations because everybody knows what these guys are doing. And the agents are out there and people, advertising people and everything. They're all throwing money at these kids. And these colleges are getting in trouble because of the money that's exchanging hands over.
Yeah. And really, I mean, what's the incentive for the athlete to not take the money?
Yeah, so they're saying, look, it's not worth the hassle. Just let them go pro if that's what they're going to do. These one and dones are just messing up the system.
Yeah.
And I agree with it. I think that's like Kentucky. Kentucky plays 5 freshmen almost every year.
Yeah.
Because then they all 5 go pro the next year. I mean, that's not exact, but it's close.
I mean, if you can do it in baseball, I think you should be able to do it in basketball.
Yeah, they go straight out of high school.
Yeah. Or, you know, like football, it says you just can't.
Yeah. Yeah, football, you have to wait till your graduating class or something like that.
Yeah.
Before you can go in. You don't have to play 4 years, but you can't do it till your graduating class from the year you graduated high school or something along those lines.
Yeah, football's a little bit different though.
Yeah, football, you don't want to be a boy out there amongst men.
No.
And
no,
there's a big difference between 18 and 22.
Yes.
At that age, and you know, and you're talking about the programs that colleges put kids through when they come in.
Yeah.
They really beef them up. So.
So you would do trial by basketball, but not against Moses Malone.
No, that was not. I would have needed to choose a champion.
Who would your champion be to play Moses Malone?
Michael Jordan.
That would be a good champion.
That was probably, he wasn't in high school then. He was probably just in middle school or elementary then, but he still would have been better than me.
Well, he did get cut from his basketball team.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So
maybe he wouldn't have been so great then.
Yeah.
But, you know, while trial by battle did not make it to America per se, we did have dueling.
That's true.
And dueling is, in effect, a trial by battle.
Kind of, yeah. It would settle, I guess, basically like personal squabbles, not so much actual
matters of law.
Right.
Yeah, you would challenge someone to a duel. And
I challenge your right to breathe.
The term, you know, how they do the gloves there and they swat somebody across the face with their glove, I challenge you to duel, or they throw the glove down. That came from the trial by battle. Because the trial by battle also spelled out what you had to wear. And it said you would be bare from the knees down and the elbows down, and that all you could wear was leather armor, so that everybody was the same. And then it said your underclothing would be linen or silk or something like that, but everybody had to be dressed the same. You could only use a leather shield, and then you had to choose similar weapons, whether they were swords or what are those spiky balls on a chain on a stick?
A mace.
A mace, yeah, maces and things like that. So, you know, you had to pick something like that. So that was, in effect, a duel at the time. But and also said you could wear gloves, but they had to be light gloves. And that was where the gloves came in to effect for the dueling later on.
Yeah. I know there's actually some people that settle disputes online with games. They want to play 1v1.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a meme. 1v1 me on Rust, bro. The Call of Duty kind of joke there.
Here's a problem. For me, I wouldn't want to do it until I'd seen who my opponent was.
Yeah, that'd be a little scary.
You sign up for that, then you get the mountain, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know? So, that'd be a little bit scary to sign up for that. Like, say, the only way you do it is if you're facing death anyway. Then you got nothing to lose.
If you sign up and you're facing the mountain, you better hit the road.
That's right. Because he's going to hit your face
and smash it.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to bring us to
legal breeze.
So legal breeze is a part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions. Let me talk about them. And the first one is Cumberg Nation.
That was that trial by ordeal that had to do with was it ingesting things?
No, that would be ingestation, I think.
Oh.
Maybe, I don't know. Is that a word? No, Cumberg Nation is where somebody basically speaks an oath for you.
Oh, that's right. And you can go get witnesses.
That's right.
And character witnesses.
Generally, it happened that you had to have a certain number of witnesses to prove it. And usually the number was about 12. And the interesting thing is that it was not really required for the nobles in certain context. They didn't actually have to get anybody to say an oath for them.
Well, because they're noble, so everybody knows that.
It was the middle class that had to have the Cumberg Nation, and then basically the untrustworthy people, they were the ones who didn't really matter if you could find somebody to vouch for you or not, then you had to go to the ordeal.
The cards have always been stacked against the lower class.
That's right. Now, where does trial by ordeal date back to?
Well, it dates back to the Germanic tribes.
But even farther back than that.
Well, I don't know.
The Code of Hammurabi.
Oh, the Code of Hammurabi.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have that on my wall.
You what?
I have that on my wall.
The Code of Hammurabi?
Yes, I can always follow it.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I guess it's some kind of document, isn't it? Is it on a poster?
I think it's chiseled in stone.
Oh, chiseled in stone? Well, they probably took pictures of it. You can have a picture up, not the actual stone.
Yeah, selfie.
That's what I meant. I have those. I have those learnings on the wall, whatever they are.
Now, what is a plowshare?
A plowshare is the sharp end of the plow, and they heat it up and make you hold it, and it burns your hands, but you're innocent.
Now, using 18th century logic, explain to me, give me two examples of why a witch would float but not sink.
Well, because the water's pure, and so it's rejecting the witch from it.
That's right.
And a witch would probably believe in Satan, so it would never have been baptized, so you wouldn't dunk, it would float.
I think you're qualified to be a witch trial judge.
A witch doctor.
A witch doctor.
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang.
I told the witch doctor. You know what he said?
He told me what to do, he said. Is that it?
I think that's it.
What about the judicious diem? I thought for sure I was going to hear that one.
I actually looked at that and I thought, no, that's too obvious.
Oh, man. I thought for sure when you said that one up front, I thought
What is judicium dia?
Well, that's God is a judge.
Judgment of God, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's bonus points. You get that one.
Oh, good.
So.
Well, that'll make up for the Cumbridge one.
Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch. I forgot that one. I thought that was the ingesting one.
Basically, if you can get Benedict Cumberbatch to speak for you, you do not have to do a trial by ordeal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, he'll do it. He count as 12 oaths.
That's right.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.